broadcasting in HD radio at 88.9 FM. This is Central Coast Public Radio, KUSP, Santa Cruz, KBDH, San Ardo, streaming live and podcasting at KUSP.org. Hey everybody, I'm Gary Shapiro, and it's time for From the Bookshelf.
Life is dull, it's nothing but one big lull. Then presto, you do a skull and find that you're reeling. She sighs and you're feeling like a toy on a string. And your heart goes ring-a-ding-ding, ring-a-ding-ding, ring-a-ding-ding.
How could that... I recently read an article in a supplement that came with my New Yorker magazine. The article, The King of Ring-a-Ding-Ding, was an excellent profile of the songwriter Jimmy Van Heusen. It was written by my guest tonight, James Kaplan. Mr. Kaplan has written many articles and books and was with us some time ago after the publication of Jerry Lewis's memoir of his years as part of the comedy team Martin and Lewis, which James Kaplan co-wrote. James Kaplan, welcome back to From the Bookshelf.
Delighted to be here, Gary. Thank you.
So, who was Jimmy Van Heusen? That wasn't his real name, huh?
No. Jimmy Van Heusen was actually Edward Chester Babcock of Syracuse, New York, upstate New York. He came out of upstate New York. He was a prodigy, and he was one of a kind. He came out of a completely unpromising background, very straight-laced, Presbyterian environment, and was just a wild musical genius and also a sex maniac and a few other things.
And a pilot. Well, you know, when we think of the classic songwriters, everybody mentions Cole Porter, George Gershwin, but if you look at the amazing catalog of Jimmy Van Heusen, it includes 4 Oscar winners, in 44 for Swingin' on a Star, 57 for All the Way, 59 for High Hopes, and Call Me Irresponsible in 1963, and many, many nominations for other songs. Sinatra recorded 84 of his songs, and Bing Crosby quite a few songs, and many other songwriters and performers. Why isn't he more well-known, do you think?
I think he's just one of those, first of all, he's of the second generation. Gershwin and Porter, Harold Arlen's a little younger, but the Mount Rushmore of American popular song, really were born right around the turn of the century, just before the turn of the last century, or just after the turn of the last century. Jimmy was born in 1913, so he's a little bit younger, and he came along at a slightly different time. He came up in the 1930s, the mid to late 30s, after those other songwriters you mentioned had really been going for quite a while, and he was perhaps a little more selfless in his art than some of those you mentioned, and his first great collaborator was the lyricist Johnny Burke, who was an amazing lyricist. Johnny Burke was a sickly guy, and Jimmy switched over to Sammy Kahn in the early 50s, but he had known him since the 1930s.
Now, how did Chester Babcock become Jimmy Van Heusen?
He was a character. He was a character. He was burning a hole in Syracuse's pocket. He couldn't wait to get out of there. But in the meantime, while he was there, he used to have a radio show. He wangled his way onto a radio station in upstate New York, WSYR, and had his own show at the age of 16. But the station manager told him his own show, he would play some songs. You know, disc jockeys in those days the disc jockey was really an invention of the 1940s. In those days, there was live music on the radio, there was drama. People didn't really play discs. Jimmy used to play his own song sometimes, but his show was largely consisted of taking contributions from people out there in his listening in his audience who wrote songs and playing them. Anyway, his station manager told him that his name, Edward Chester Babcock, was absolutely not
a good stage name.
Not a good stage name. And he happened to be looking at an ad in the magazine for Van Heusen collars, Van Heusen shirts, and he just, on the spur of the moment, decided he would become Jimmy Van Heusen, and he did.
Well, you know, two of the greatest performers of the 20th century owe a debt to Jimmy Van Heusen: Bing Crosby, who is, I would say, the preeminent entertainer of the first half of the 20th century, and Frank Sinatra, the paramount performer of the second half. And Van Heusen wrote extensively for both. And let's start with talking about Crosby. Now, I brought a 78 along in my favorite Van Heusen song for Bing. Maybe not one of his biggest hits necessarily, but a beautiful record. Check it out with me. Kind of divided into phases. His early years was as a jazz singer, and then he became a singer of personal romantic ballads like Just One More Chance and Please. And then the sort of second phase of Crosby's career, the smooth, relaxed, easygoing singer of his years as a star in radio and movies. And Van Heusen's melodies were just perfect for that period in Crosby's.
And Burke's lyrics.
And Burke's lyrics. How did they come to work with Crosby?
Well, Jimmy went out to California, and he went out to California the first time to do some work, not with Johnny Burke, was then introduced to Johnny Burke, and they hit it off immediately. Johnny Burke happened to be in between composers at that point. And they hit it off right away, and he could tell that even though Van Heusen was much younger, that he was brilliant. He latched on to him, and Burke introduced Van Heusen to Crosby. And Crosby recognized a kindred spirit instantly when he saw Jimmy Van Heusen, when he heard his music, and when he just saw the way that Jimmy Van Heusen walked. Crosby was a walking paradox. He was a great romantic singer, but he was an absolutely unromantic singer in a lot of ways. He was a cool character who could convey great warmth and yet always retain something, held something back. There was a coolness to him, and he sensed that same thing in Jimmy Van Heusen.
And he never liked to say "I love you" in a song.
He hated to say it, and he specifically instructed Johnny Burke never to write those words.
I think the one song that comes closest is Moonlight Becomes You.
How close does it get?
Well, let's take a listen.
Yeah.
life becomes you. It goes with your hair. You certainly know the right thing to wear. Moonlight becomes you. I'm thrilled at the sight, and I could get so romantic tonight. You're all dressed up to go dreaming. Now don't tell me I'm wrong. What a night to go dreaming. Mind if I tag along? If I say I love you, I want you to know it's not just because there's moonlight, although moonlight becomes you so.
So he says, if I say I love you. I haven't said
if. If. A big if in Bing's case.
And so they composed quite a few songs for Bing in those years of Philco radio time and the Road Pictures. They did almost all the scores for the Road Pictures, did they not?
They did. Burke and Jimmy did, I think, 5 out of 6 of them. Not the first one. Not the first one.
Mm-hmm. Well, that one is from Road to Morocco.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. What a great song.
It is an amazing song. They don't write them like that anymore.
Now, but we were talking about Frank Sinatra, and Sinatra also had a debt to Jimmy Van Heusen, since he wrote so many of his songs. But the Sinatra and Van Heusen connection actually predates Crosby, because he wrote two big hits for Frank when he was a vocalist with Tommy Dorsey.
He did. He did. He first met Frank. He first met Frank in the early 30s when Frank was a nobody. Frank used to stalk around Tin Pan Alley, trying to ingratiate his way into song publishers' offices. And he was very much a nobody in the early 30s. He was a pushy, skinny little guy who was trying to get on the radio. Even before he was hired by Harry James, he was haunting these music publishers' offices, and that's when he met Jimmy Van Heusen, who was a song plugger. And Jimmy Van Heusen's career actually really preceded Sinatra's. Van Heusen was 2 years older than Sinatra, and Jimmy hooked up early on with a lyricist named Eddie DeLange, and they wrote a couple of big hits, Darn That Dream and Shake Down the Stars. But when Jimmy ran into Johnny Burke in New York, they hit it off immediately, and they turned out an incredible song called Imagination.
And was Johnny Burke the lyricist on those, after Imagination? I guess it was Polka Dots and Moonbeams. Was he the lyricist?
Yeah, yes, very much so. That's Polka Dots and Moonbeams is a very, if you look at the lyrics again, it's an intensely Irish song. It's all about the pug-nosed dream, uh-huh. You know, and those freckles. Very Irish, very Johnny Burke.
And very Tommy Dorsey. It was perfect for Dorsey's orchestra.
Yes.
Now, but I noticed that Nancy, one of Frank's early hits, Nancy with a Laughing Face, not written by Johnny Burke, but rather Phil Silvers, the comedian Phil Silvers?
The comedian Phil Silvers.
How did he come to?
And it was originally, now you're going to stump me here, because this should be on the tip of my tongue.
Yeah.
But the truth is that it was not originally Nancy with a Laughing Face. It was
Phyllis. No, I don't know.
Maybe. Yeah. But it was another similarly cadenced, two-syllable female name that was not Nancy, but Phil Silvers was a great, he was part of the Varsity. The Varsity was Sinatra's team, his team of cronies in the 1940s, and Phil Silvers was a very important part of that, and he was a talented guy. And I think he and Jimmy were noodling around with this song with the other woman's name, and Frank was the kingpin, and through kingpin magic, it became Nancy rather than Phyllis. Or so one of your listeners knows, I'm sure.
Give us a call. Actually, don't call. Don't bother. We'll look it up. And then, of course, Sinatra, his career kind of fell on hard times, and it wasn't until the early 50s when he teamed up with Nelson Riddle at Capitol Records that he kind of came back with some great records that really changed the history of popular music.
1953, the most incredible comeback in show business history, because it wasn't just a musical comeback, it was also the year of his great cinematic comeback, and From Here to Eternity. And it was a rebirth the likes of which has never been seen before in American popular culture. But he was reborn in the early 1950s with Riddle, and Jimmy Van Heusen at that point was living out on the West Coast. He at first was a very reluctant convert to the West Coast, but became kind of addicted to it. He was crazy about Palm Springs, as was Sinatra early on. They had that in common. It was a very strong bond between them. They had a lot of other bonds, too. And then when Sammy Kahn came into the picture, when Johnny Burke got sick, there was this magical teaming of the three of them for the great TV production of
Our Town.
Yeah, Our Town. Exactly. Yeah, yeah.
Love and Marriage. Uh-huh. And that was an Emmy Award-winning song for Jimmy.
It was the first song ever to win an Emmy. Yeah.
Hmm. What a terrible song it is. No, it's
well, it's funny, isn't it? Yeah. It is. Sammy Kahn had a checkered career, and he was an over clever lyricist. He was a brilliant lyricist, but he was a relentlessly clever man. He couldn't help himself, and the two, Jimmy and Sammy, wrote a lot of songs together, some of them were good.
Quite a number of them were good, but not
all of them were good.
Right. I guess if you write 300 songs in your career, you're entitled to write a bunch of bad ones as well as all the classics.
Yeah. But it was a very particular era in American songwriting, and also the troika of Sinatra and Van Heusen and Kahn was a very peculiar kind of emotional place. It had a lot to do with distance. There was a certain cynicism to the enterprise, if anybody knew anything about Sinatra, there was at the very least a very delicate irony in Frank Sinatra singing the song "Love and Marriage" in 1955.
Exactly, and I guess Jimmy Van Heusen must have made a lot of money on that song when later Campbell's Soup licensed it and used it, Soup and Sandwich, instead of Love and Marriage.
Jimmy made a lot of money, and he lost a lot of money, too. He was very, he didn't care. He didn't keep track, really. The checks came, the checks went, he spent them. A lot of it was stolen from him by unscrupulous business associates. He ended up okay financially, but he wasn't a business mind like Sinatra.
We're chatting with James Kaplan, who's working on a biography of Frank Sinatra and recently wrote this wonderful article about Jimmy Van Heusen. I also noticed that Jimmy Van Heusen wrote the score to a Martin and Lewis picture, Partners.
He got around. Yes, it's unbelievable. Jimmy had an unbelievable work ethic. He was a guy who just lived for writing songs. He was happy if he was working 18 hours a day. He didn't golf. His only his hobbies were flying and
screwing.
Sinatra
and Van Heusen shared some beautiful women, if I'm not mistaken.
And one in particular who was and is a delightful person, was very cooperative for the piece I wrote on Jimmy, Angie Dickinson.
And she was in love with Jimmy Van Heusen?
I think that she, I don't know if in love is the correct phrase, really. I think she did love him. I think she had enormous respect for him. I think she was awed by him. I don't know if Angie Dickinson was ever in love, in the moonbeams sense of the phrase,
yeah,
that we throw around so easily. There was a certain distance to her. She fit into this ethos of the mid-50s, of the swinging mid to late 50s. She loved to have fun, and she loved sex, and she loved hanging around. She loved to have fun, and she was crazy about both Sinatra and Van Heusen. And as she sort of delicately put it to me, she was delighted when Frank was free, and she was delighted when Jimmy was free. I think that Frank held precedence, however. And also, it should be noted as a sort of dark undertone of the story that Jimmy Van Heusen always had a certain, as so many people did, a certain fear of Sinatra. Mm-hmm. One of his nicknames for Sinatra, very much in private, of course, was the monster.
Right, right. And did they ever have a falling out? Sinatra was famous.
The closest they ever had to a falling out, and it was pretty big, and it's a remarkable testament to Van Heusen's greatness and to his hold on Sinatra, and to Sinatra's deep feelings for Jimmy Van Heusen, that Sinatra didn't just cut him off, as he did with so many others. Sinatra had this really this truly Sicilian sense of vengeance, that when people crossed him, that was that, and he never spoke to them again. Happened with Lauren Bacall, happened with so many people, that he would just, the wall would come down and he would never talk to them again. Van Heusen committed a very severe, a grave transgression against Sinatra, because there was this huge fracas in 1960 when Jack Kennedy was running for president, it was 62. He had run for president, and he was president. He was making a trip to the West Coast, and he was going to stay. At Frank Sinatra's house, and Bobby Kennedy said, "You're not going to stay at Frank Sinatra's house because Frank Sinatra has unsavory connections." And Bobby Kennedy put his foot down, and Jack Kennedy could therefore not stay at Sinatra's house. And Sinatra, it was one of the great temper tantrums of all time. He had erected a special helicopter pad for Kennedy. He went out personally with a sledgehammer and broke it up. Anyway, Kennedy ended up coming out and staying at Bing Crosby's house instead of Sinatra's.
Bing was a little safer than Frank.
A little safer, and Crosby and Jimmy lived right next to each other. I mean, literally next to each other. I think they even shared a garden wall in Palm Springs. And the Secret Service asked Van Heusen if his house could be used to lodge the Secret Service members of Kennedy's of his group, and Jimmy was over a barrel. He had to say, "I mean, it's the Secret Service, the President of the United States." He said yes, and Sinatra was furious at him.
Yes, but he forgave him eventually.
He forgave him eventually.
Jack Kennedy, but he forgave Jimmy Van Heusen.
He never quite forgave. Well, you know who he really never forgave was Peter Lawford. I think that he found a way to, just because Kennedy was so powerful, I'm not sure that he didn't forgive him, but Kennedy was not somebody who could simply be written off.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, of course, Sinatra went so far as to campaign for Ronald Reagan later, so.
Yeah.
but his campaigning in 1960 for President Kennedy involved Jimmy Van Heusen, because Van Heusen wrote the song that High Hopes, that was adapted as a campaign slogan song.
Yes, it was. And it was, it's funny about Van Heusen. There are songs of his, and one doesn't necessarily say this about, say, Cole Porter or maybe a little bit about Irving Berlin sometimes, but there are songs of Jimmy Van Heusen's that are just so ethereally great, like Here's That Rainy Day and Imagination. Those are amazing, monumentally great American popular songs. And then there are songs he wrote, again, especially in that period, and a number of them with Sammy Kahn, that in 50 years later set your teeth on edge a little bit.
You never want to hear them again.
Yeah. It's funny. Maybe his facileness, his ability to crank out huge amounts of work, worked against him in some instances. But even as I say that, I realize that Berlin had that ability too, and certainly Porter did too. And perhaps it's not unfair to say of Jimmy Van Heusen that he was a songwriter of a slightly lower echelon than those great songwriters.
Well, you mentioned Here's That Rainy Day, so let's set our Wayback Machine for November 1961, the place, the Sands Hotel in Las Vegas.
Oh, boy.
The time, the wee small hours of the morning.
Have saved those leftover dreams. Funny, but here's that rainy day. Here's that rainy day. They told me about, and I laughed at the thought that it might turn out this way. Where is that worn out wish that I threw aside after I found my love so near? It's funny how love becomes a cold rainy day. Funny that rainy day is here.
Frank Sinatra singing the song "Here's That Rainy Day" by Jimmy Van Heusen.
Imagine all those fiddlers in Vegas. It doesn't get any better than that, though. I mean, it holds up like gangbusters, that song. And I don't know what's being composed today that we're going to be able to say that about in 50 years.
My guest, James Kaplan, thank you so much for being with us this week on From the Bookshelf and talking about Jimmy Van Heusen.
Thank you so much, Gary. Pleasure.
That's all the time we have for this week's From the Bookshelf. Thanks for listening. Hope you enjoyed the show, and I'll be back again next week with another great program. In the meantime, check out our podcast page at KUSP.com. www.bookshelfstaff.org. I want to thank our From the Bookshelf staff, Miss Breanne Beal, for all of her hard work. Hey, thanks, Breanne. For KUSP, I'm Gary Shapiro. Good night, everybody.